Greetings and welcome to HFS Unfiltered. My name is Rohan Kulkarni and I lead the life sciences practice here. And I am joined this morning with Paul Watson of Hitachi. Paul?
Yeah, so good morning. So Paul Watson, so I lead the healthcare and life sciences industry at Hitachi Digital Services. I also play a role with Hitachi's group marketing and sales division, which looks after our top strategic accounts at a group level.
So you want to kick us off?
Yeah, so I'm really interested, Ryan, to get your perspective. So obviously a big shakeup in US markets, particularly in life sciences. And, you know, all the forecasts show significant amount of money, over $1 trillion being lost within pharma and biopharma over the next 10 years. How do you think the market's going to respond to that? What's your perspective from an industry?
You're spot on. I mean, look, it's unprecedented headwinds for the life sciences market in general, right? The estimations are anywhere between $1 trillion and $1.5 trillion revenue losses over the next 10 years. Nothing of this magnitude has ever been something that the leaders within the industry have experienced in the past. So based on a lot of our research, indications are that they're not quite prepared. Having said that, I think there are about three different ways in which that the industry can begin to sort of mitigate these challenges. I think the first one is going to be around new markets. Okay. Traditionally, there's been a bias towards the North American and the Western European markets. I think enterprises will need to look at other markets, particularly those whose populations are continuing to grow, whether it's be India, whether it's China, Southeast Asia, or even Africa for that matter, where disease prevalence is also increasing. It's an aging population, right? So they're all prime conditions that would probably help life sciences to sort of mitigate some of their revenue challenges. The second option that I would propose is sort of new distribution channels.
Sure.
Typically, no matter where you're in the world, typically, across the spectrum of complexity, where I would argue that the U.S. is probably the most complex in terms of getting product from the manufacturer to the consumer. Mm. I think a new distribution channel, such as going direct to consumer, is probably going to be particularly encouraging. And we saw some of that movement earlier this week with the Trump RX, where Pfizer and the new administration here came to an agreement about trying to distribute certain medications directly from soon-to-be TrumpRx.org, I believe, or GOV, one of them. And then the last thing I would call out is, and you and I have chatted about this a little bit, is sort of disease condition-specific, a closed loop where the pharma or the med device actually owns that disease end-to-end, right? Yeah. And I think a good example would probably be diabetes, where they have clinicians who can help with the diagnosis. They have products that can manage the disease. They probably have nutritionists and diabetic educators who can essentially wrap their arms around that particular patient and either delay the onset of disease, prevent disease, delay the onset of disease, and assuming that the disease still occurs, manage it in a much more proactive manner. So I think there are some of these kinds that will probably help them, mitigate some of these revenue challenges. Well, what do you think? I mean, you talk to them every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're certainly looking at how they build agility globally. I think that's everything from, core systems, networks, and their infrastructure, but also their strategies for investment outside of their traditional markets. So I think, if I look at where they're focusing their attention, it's on laying the foundations at this stage. I think those sort of more interesting topics you've introduced around the sort of more holistic business model, I think those are very early days. And I think that's a huge change for those types of companies, because it's actually a fundamental change in the way they do business today.
Sure.
So evolving business models, new partnerships, new types of supply chain are going to be really big challenges for them to overcome.
Indeed. And it sort of leads into the regulatory landscape, right? I think there's an argument to be made that some of the changes that the new administration has been forcing upon the way the U.S. deals with medications and with drugs, I'm beginning to suspect that it is getting less and less inclusive. and where there used to be the notion that the FDA was sort of the gold standard in terms of regulations. I think that more and more countries, you know, whether it be national security, whether it be for reasons of nationalism, whether it be reasons of a different approach towards science, may start regulating on their own versus looking at the U.S. So I'm curious, are you beginning to get a similar sense, or how do you think life sciences will address these kind of challenges?
I think it's a natural response, right? So as they see an element of, let's call it maybe distrust or weakening of those regulatory systems, and also the barriers that the U.S. changes are putting in place for access through different markets as well. I think you're naturally going to see those regulatory systems evolve. I don't know whether they'll be in a individual country-wise basis or more a regional collaboration, where you might see sort of certain European counterparts form new standards and regulations or enforce them or reduce the adoption of FDA standards. But it's only going to introduce a lot of complexity for the manufacturers. How will they manage that sort of the various different hurdles that they're going to have to move through? How do they keep an eye on the regulations as they change and evolve over time? And so actually thinking about how they can move through that process, I guess, in a more automated or more supported way.
Sure.
Using things like AI and sort of last mile type technologies to actually monitor, adapt and prepare them for moving through those regulatory cycles is going to be increasingly important.
Indeed. Let me add a couple of thoughts on that. I think, generally speaking, life sciences will probably have to consider multi-jurisdictional commercialization strategies.
Yeah.
Something, they do a lot of that today, but this is probably going to be put on steroids.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a newer regulatory aspect of it. I think the second aspect of this is around the last mile AI. You sort of alluded to that. I think to me, the last mile AI is going to be around models that will anticipate and be able to react to submissions a whole lot faster and much more accurately and so on. Right. And then the last thing I want to call out is, we did some research in this space earlier in the year. We found that 80% of life science companies, N equals about 67 or so, 80% of them indicated that a great lesson coming out of the pandemic was is deglobalization.
Mm.
And what we're seeing is that more and more of them are beginning to sort of deglobalize their operations in general, which might sort of lean into the notion of, sort of a diffuse regulatory landscape, if you would. And as a consequence of that, my sense is, where they're going to be challenged is trying to balance sort of at-scale operations against sort of regional needs from a regulatory standpoint.
Yeah.
That is going to be very tricky.
Yeah, and I think it's a balancing act. I was talking to some companies yesterday who have a sort of decentralized model, but it also introduces fragmentation, right? From an IT and digital perspective, and actually I think, their ability to look at a global landscape through a single lens and leverage their critical assets, their clinical data sets for research, and actually have that sort of centralization but decentralization at the same time is going to be really important to enable them to be agile, but also enable them to adapt and be specific to the markets they're operating in.
Indeed. Itachi, right? It's a huge global company. You all do all kinds of interesting things. My sense is that you are in sort of a little bit of a pole position in terms of bringing the capabilities across the multiple enterprises that are part of the group. What I'd almost say full stack, from being able to help help pharmas and med devices and biotechs sort of, build factories to operationalize those factories, take products to market, and the entire technology services surrounding that. So thoughts in terms of, you think, go forward, that will really be something that more and more enterprises will be looking towards you for?
Yeah, I think so. I think these changes affect the whole downstream supply chain and partnerships.
Yeah.
Our business has been very strong in certain markets, you know, and I think in our domestic market in Japan, we've been operating for many decades now, building plants and bioreactors and strong partnerships with the Japanese pharma companies. I think we've seen those companies evolve gradually and move into international markets. But, you know, the challenge is there for us as well. How do we adapt and scale our capabilities, which may be more central to one or another region, and how do we engage and move with our customers, right? That's going to be the big challenge. I think we've seen a lot of investment. I've seen a lot of investment from Hitachi building capability outside of their traditional markets and a lot of investment into the US. So recent acquisition with Castle Hill Technologies, they look at sort of plant process optimization, specifically in the pharma industry. So I think it's now, how do we bring that sort of industrial side of Hitachi and make that agile and available to support the sort of globalization and move into different markets for our customers? I think innovation is going to play a key role. I certainly see huge investments in sort of deep tech, whether that's for creating digital sort of scalability and agility, or more specifically around advancing research and drug development. So thinking about how they can effectively conduct that research and ensure that research is supporting different sort of geographic regions as they move through the value chain is going to be increasingly important. The last thing I can see from our perspective is thinking around that acceleration. So how do you scale up quickly? Mm-hmm. You know, a big move towards the sort of industrial metaverse and digital twins for sort of actually thinking about the commissioning process and how you can almost simulate the commissioning process and scale up process to maximize yield and throughput of those facilities. Because actually that time to market is going to be critical. So, you know, and how you do that at scale in multiple geographies is going to be a vital part of the answer of sort of addressing these challenges on the industry.
Indeed. You know, you're in a position to sort of elevate the role of a traditional service provider to being sort of a co-innovator at a global scale by bringing all of these sort of disparate but yet sort of an inclusive set of capabilities together. I think your ability to operate collaborate at higher levels within the enterprise probably will allow you to sort of manage those risks in a much better manner. Because one of the things that I'm sure you recognize is that those revenue challenges that I mentioned earlier on are a function of, you know, the end of the blockbuster regime. It's the patent cliff. It's the U.S. government beginning to negotiate prices for Medicare, right? All of these forces are coming together. I think in the context of all of these, I think life sciences are going to need credible global partners with that entire suite of capabilities that can, you know, manage risk in a much more optimal manner than they have in the past, I would say.
Yeah, I think you it's exactly right. It's about partnership, right, and about how you co-innovate. I think that's, you know, been Hitachi's heritage for over 100 years now, around thinking around how do we advance through you know, introduction of new technology, new levels of automation, new levels of intelligence to actually move industry forwards in a way that benefits society. So that's, you know, our sort of deep heritage. I think establishing that kind of partnership at a strategic level is going to be a key part of solving this challenge. You know, some challenges are too big for any one company.
Of course, yeah.
And probably too big for Hitachi and our customers. It's around then how you create that ecosystem which enables you to have that sort of agility, flexibility, but also capability to go and execute at that kind of scale.
Indeed. On that note, you know, I guess the key word is an ecosystem, a partner ecosystem, indeed, right? But fascinating conversation, Paul. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.